Welcome into the Titan Size Podcast. I'm Luke Worsham, joined by the other two hosts of the Titan Size Podcast, Matthias Wadner and Will Lomas. We are back after taking a break for a week, while the Titans were also taking a break for a week, and now they are back because on Sunday at noon they will face the Baltimore Ravens. So before we get into any of our discussion topics, and there are plenty, let's talk about the Titans' injury situation coming out of the bye week. Corey Davis will play. That has been confirmed. Jonathan Cyprien likely to play. Quentin Spain won't play. Really the only question mark, I think, and DeMarco Murray will also play probably. Delanie Walker, that's the big question mark. Other than him, the Titans come out of the bye week much healthier, and they're in a good spot.
Yeah, finally, we'll get to see Corey Davis again, and we'll get to see Jonathan Cyprien again, who we really haven't had a chance to see in a full game aside from week one, which was a little rough on his end. But I'm expecting him to be a pretty big part of the secondary. I think Denoris Searcy has actually played pretty well, so I'm not sure Cyprien is just going to come in and take all the snaps. But I'm definitely excited to see him. Obviously, I'm excited to see Corey Davis. He'll give our offense a new dimension. And like you said, we're getting healthier again. I still think Delanie's going to play. Mularkey has played players, even though they don't practice in the past. I think DeMarco didn't practice for like a full week one time earlier this season, and he ended up playing. So I still think Delanie's going to play. And even if he's not at 100%, I think Jonnu has proven himself capable enough to step in there and be a key contributor, even if he has to.
Yeah, I mean, it's a weird situation because the Titans almost have, you know, as much as they can. They almost have too many talented players at wide receiver and defensive back now that Searcy's been playing well. And, you know, Decker's, you know, shown flashes. I think between Decker and Taywan Taylor, you're going to get a good game out of one of them. And now they have Corey Davis and Cyprien in the mix. So, it'll be a weird way to see, you know, does Searcy get 30% of the reps still, and Cyprien comes in for the majority? Do they split them 50-50? Is it situational? Do they have three safeties on the field? That's what I'm really interested in. I expect Corey Davis to come in and be wide receiver one for this team and move everybody else down a peg. I mean, you listen to everybody talk during the week, and they're all on board with Corey Davis. They're ready to see, you know, I think Mularkey said he doesn't think he'll play 60 snaps, but That doesn't change his role in the offense. You know, I don't need him playing necessarily on the goal line. If you're just going to throw a fade, you know, let him rest on that rep. You know, there's plenty of times when you can not play him, but when he's in, I expect him to be the X wide receiver in this offense. The Delanie stuff worries me a little bit, and the Spain stuff worries me too, and we're not going to talk about it a lot, you know, just because he's a guard, but, you know, he's one of the better offensive linemen we've had in terms of consistency in the last 3 years. And he was really on the team and started showing how solid he could be before the offensive line turned into what it is now. So I worry about that. And Walker, self-explanatory. I hope they keep him active and he plays 20 snaps a game. He's on the field on third down, and maybe Jonnu and Supernaw find a way to split the reps the rest of the game. But I don't know. The biggest injury concern to me is Quentin Spain, and I don't think it'll be talked about enough until the game's going on and we're trying to figure out where all that pressure's coming from.
Yeah. Thankfully, we have Brian Schwenke to fill in for him.
Which is weird. Yeah, like Brian Schwenke, like as a backup guard, feels a lot better than Brian Schwenke as a starter, because you know that he's going to come off the bench healthy and rested and with a familiarity in the offense. So, you know, it doesn't feel like it has before when he's been a starter on this offensive line. It feels like he's a really good sixth offensive lineman instead of, you know, a bad starter. So I'm interested to see how he plays.
Yeah, and thank you to the Colts for cutting him, because I feel much better with Schwenke out there as a fill-in than just throwing Corey Levin out into the wild.
Or Lolito.
I was going to say, or Lolito, who... Man, now, that did not work out.
Corey Levin is an athletic profile that Jim Coburn likes a lot as a future starter and, you know, a really good starter. So, you know, maybe watch him for later. But, yeah, you're right. You know, it's good to have somebody who is seemingly really good friends with Taylor Lewan and Ben Jones and the rest of the guys, you know, playing right next to Lewan. So, I mean, he gave the guy a shoe when he needed it most in the Colts game. So, yeah. I mean, there's got to be some chemistry there. So, we'll see.
So, let's address the AFC South elephant in the room, and that's that I don't think anybody would debate at this point other than a couple of people on Twitter that the Titans have the best quarterback situation in the AFC South right now because the Jacksonville Jaguars are having to run the ball 60 times a game because they refuse to let their quarterback throw it because he sucks. The Indianapolis Colts have lost their elite starting quarterback, Andrew Luck, and are now going with someone that they traded a bust draft pick for, Philip Dorsett for Jacoby Brissett. And the Houston Texans lost quarterback Jesus Deshaun Watson to a torn ACL. Rest in peace. If you ever need to have a good cry, just go to Peter King's Twitter and search for his tweets from this past week. I mean, all that to say that with Tom Savage, Jacoby Brissett, and Blake Bortles as the other three quarterbacks in this division right now, the Titans see Marcus Mariota, a former Heisman winner, a player of the month last year, and a very, very good starting quarterback. There's no reason for them to not like their situation.
Yeah, just to touch on the Deshaun Watson injury, if you were on Twitter yesterday when it happened, it became a morgue of sorts, and it was really weird. Like,
it was like the obituaries in the newspaper.
Yeah, it was obituary. Like, it was gross to watch. It was very bad reporting.
And yeah, don't even think that distracted people from trying to encourage the Houston Texans to sign their boy Colin Kaepernick.
Man, it was quick.
I don't know. People were really caught up. I mean, it's not like we don't feel bad.
Bob McNair, the guy that called people who kneel for the anthem the inmates, you think Colin Kaepernick wants to go there?
Yeah, that whole thing. Like, the rumors are, you know, alleged, blah, 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 that Dwayne Brown wanted out of out of the Houston because he never saw eye to eye with what Bob McNair has said and what he's done. I mean, I think there's a story out again. I'm not breaking any news. This is stories I've read online. There was a time when Obama got elected where he came down and told the locker room not to cheer as much because it was really hard on some of the gentlemen at the front office people and stuff. Which is, I don't know, the worst thing I've heard. For everybody to keep it down about Obama getting elected, you know, not getting political here, not Republican, not Democrat, nothing like that. I'm just saying
that's never heard sort of that embarrassing. Before.
Yeah, look that story up. It's super embarrassing. Maybe if they find incriminating stuff on Bob McNair's phone, he is hired in Houston as sort of, you know, payback for what he's done. Because I believe Bob McNair had his phone taken up today in the collusion case between Colin Kaepernick going back before we get off on a tangent way too far. Going back to the quarterback situation, I think it's pretty obvious that Mariota is the best quarterback in the division right now, and he is on most days, whether who's healthy or who's not. One thing I don't want to see is people complaining and saying, well, the Titans only won it because all these guys are hurt and these guys are playing at quarterback. Let me tell you, I've seen Andrew Luck and Peyton Manning win this division with some bad quarterbacks with the Titans, Jaguars, and Texans. If you think it takes away from an AFC South championship at all, if the Titans do manage to get that, you are incorrect. I don't care if they've got kickers starting as their quarterback. A win is a win, and Titans fans, if they do come out with a win in the AFC South, you don't need to feel bad about it. It's not tainted. This is just football.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, this is the NFL. Everyone gets injured. You play who's in front of you, and injuries are going to happen. People are going to get injured. I mean, Mariota has finished the last two seasons on IR.
I mean, it's not like college football where one year the SEC is dominant, and then the next year, you know, they don't have a single team in the playoffs, but in the Big Ten, they have two teams in the playoffs, both of which are essentially NFL teams. Like, it's not like that. There's no, like, everybody's good. Even the Browns are good. Like, beating the Browns, that's an accomplishment.
Yeah, and I mean, even if, all right, let's look at it this way. The AFC North, the Steelers are probably going to run away with it. And even though none of the quarterbacks in that division are injured, the quarterbacks are Joe Flacco, Andy Dalton, who's looked terrible this year, and the Browns. I don't even know who their quarterback is right now because they keep changing. So what's the difference between that and the AFC South right now? I don't see much of a difference at all. So yeah. I don't like that excuse at all.
Yeah.
So we were kind of chatting before we started recording about this event the Titans have coming up during halftime on Sunday, and that's the Titans homecoming, where, as Will joked, we will honor the legacies of four former All-Pros and about 76 former practice squad candidates. I'm really interested to see the kind of reception that Vince Young gets more than anything in this homecoming.
Yeah, I mean, we talked about it, and I'm pretty sure that he's going to get booed. I mean, I'm like the biggest Vince Young apologist there is in the entire world, so I would not boo him. I don't think you should boo anyone, really. I mean, these players put their bodies on the line for your team. I don't see a real reason to boo unless they, like, trash the fans or something. I'm not sure Vince Young did that, but it's possible he might have. But I would go just to see, like, the true greats that made the mid-2000s just so worth it. Players like Roydell Williams, a wide receiving legend for the Titans. Players like Donnie Nicky, Ryan Mouton, who couldn't catch a punt return, couldn't catch a punt ever. So those are the types of players that just are going to make the homecoming really worth it. And hopefully we can actually get a win. That's more important.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. There's a lot of kind of suspect names on this list. Now, granted, they played more snaps for the Titans than I ever will. So I give them all the credit in the world. But, Vince Young shouldn't get booed, and I don't expect he will, because I expect all the bad feelings now have shifted from Vince Young to Fisher. I think Jeff Fisher's kind of retroactively been blamed for a lot of the missteps in Vince Young's career, and I think we're going to be a little bit surprised, you know, if they show it or if you're at the game, about how Vince Young gets cheered instead of booed. Now, going back to, I don't think players should get booed. I think players should get booed. Now, not if they're, like, trying and they just don't have the physical ability, but
that
if, like...
That doesn't surprise me.
If a guy's out there and they're, like, you know, it's, like, fourth and one, and I see them playing safety or corner or something, and they have a chance to come in and make a big tackle, and instead they just kind of walk up and kind of shoulder tackle a guy, you know, in a big spot where they could have done more, then, yeah, I mean, give them a little bit of the business. But other than that, I mean, boo a guy.
I honestly can't really think of a Titans player who has been booed. I mean, I can remember countless times where the team was booed, but, like, never an individual player.
Oh. Haynesworth,
I remember... Vince Young got booed. I think it was like against the Jaguars, maybe. It was like the second week of the season.
Oh, and are you it talking was about like in a game?
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Like, if you wore a number 10 jersey for about an 8-year stretch,
you got booed.
Whether you were Jake Locker or Vince Young, there was a good chance you were going to get booed. Like, it was just a tough life for you for a while, and that's just kind of your burden.
They booed that Anthem performer that took a knee after she was done.
Oh, they booed everybody in that game right after all the Anthem stuff. So, I mean, the whole team. So, I'm not sure how many times an individual Titan has been booed, but I saw a group of Titans get booed pretty heavily.
So, let's talk a little bit about this matchup. The Baltimore Ravens, ever since they won their Super Bowl, have been... stuck in mediocrity with seemingly no hope of ever getting out. They still have a couple of their building blocks, C.J. Mosley, Terrell Suggs. They signed Tony Jefferson in free agency. But aside from those three guys and their franchise quarterback, Joe Flacco, they have nothing. I mean, I can't, like, it's bad.
Well, actually, over the offseason, I thought I really actually liked what they did because, like you said, they signed Tony Jefferson. And in the draft, they got a couple of defensive players that I thought were really good. Players like Tyus Bowser. I didn't love Marlon Humphrey, but I mean, he was fine as a cornerback pick, I guess. They got Tim Williams and they got, what's the other guy? I think it was Wormley from Michigan. So I really liked what they did in the draft defensively, but it kind of felt like they just completely ignored the offensive side of the ball, except for, I mean, bringing in Jeremy Maclin, who hadn't played fully healthy for like over a year. So that was a little, and they got Danny Woodhead, I guess, but I mean, he's been injured the whole season. Like you said, on offense, the talent level is pretty bad. Although Alex Collins seems to be the greatest running back of all time, judging by his performance last week. But this is not a roster that a quarterback like Joe Flacco can carry. Thankfully, their defense has played very well almost the whole season, and they've kind of carried them to a couple of wins. So that's possible in this game, but if their offense is trailing and they have to play from behind, this is not a team that's built to win like that. So should be an interesting game.
Yeah, I mean, the Ravens are just the Jaguars. I mean, that's, you know, if you're looking for a really close facsimile, just think, mm-hmm, you know, yeah, the Jaguars, but, you know, the only difference is
the Ravens have a competent quarterback.
Well, I'm not even 100% sure about that.
Yeah, like, I'm not sure either.
Real honest. But I was going to say the Jaguars have slightly better corners and the Titans beat them by a significant margin. So, mm-hmm. I mean, the real – now, I'm not sure if it's necessarily a difference with how the Jaguars' defensive line plays or anything like that, but Brandon Williams may be one of the two best interior defensive players in the NFL. But, I mean, not a pure pass rusher like Aaron Donald, let me correct myself, but just a guy who's – you know, the tough, old school, hard to move kind of guys like Snacks and Brandon Williams may be two of the top two, you know, in that elite echelon of, you know, interior defenders. It's going to be a huge issue when you've got Schwenke and Ben Jones trying to move him. So that's something I'm really concerned about. You know, the rest of guys, you know Mosley. He's been in the league long enough now. Suggs seems like he's been in there for four decades. You know, all those guys, you know. But, I mean, if you can get out in front, you know, you can live with grinding out in the run game. But if you've got to come from behind and you've got to go, you know, run on obvious downs and pass on obvious downs, you give this team, you know, distinct advantages with guys like Brandon Williams, because, I mean, you can't single block. This is kind of my diatribe on the importance of a great nose tackle. If you have a great pocket-pushing nose tackle, Mariota won't be able to step up into the pocket, which is a nightmare for accuracy, and it leads to overthrows. It's one of the reasons why Kevin Byard got three interceptions the last time the Titans played. If you know it's going to be a run, you can run blitz around him. If you know it's going to be a pass, you can have him bull rush the pocket and force them to contribute an extra guy. It's a nightmare if you've got one of those giant mountains in the middle. So that's where I'm going to be watching. But other than that, this roster really doesn't have a standout blue chip guy.
Yeah. Just to piggyback on Brandon Williams, he is one of the most important defensive players in the entire league. And a lot of people don't realize it, but they've kind of realized it this season because he's missed four games for the Ravens, who are 4-4. And in the four games he's played, they've gone 3-1. And in the games he hasn't played, they've kind of gotten wrecked on the ground. And it shows up in the numbers. Right now they're like one of the worst teams in the league in terms of, I think, yards per carry given up to running backs. And a lot of that is because Williams has missed half the season. And he came back against the Vikings. They actually didn't perform that well in that game. But their numbers given up, total points given up in the games that Williams has played are 0, 10, 24, and zero. So, I mean, take that as you will. But yeah. And they absolutely stuffed Jay Ajayi last week. I think the Dolphins got like 2.5 yards a carry.
They shoved him so hard he fell all the way to Philadelphia.
I was about to say that. They beat him up so bad that whatever happened in the locker room after that game ended up him getting moved to another team. Like, that's crazy. I mean, honestly, that seems like exactly what happened. Is he must have gotten real upset with how they used him, and he got traded. So, I don't know. It's...
Yeah.
That was an interesting trade. That was very strange, I thought.
That was weird. That did not make any sense to me. I mean,
this was a great trade deadline.
It was a great trade for the Eagles. They got a Pro Bowl running back for next to nothing.
Yeah, but like apparently he has no knees, and they have LeGarrette Blount already. I don't know. It seemed like, well, this could have been like a trade for the future, even though he has no knees, apparently.
Trade for the immediate short-term future.
Yeah.
So we talked a little bit about before we started recording that, you know, we joke about Dick LeBeau having lost his touch and, no, the Titans haven't got any sacks. But when you look at it in the last couple of weeks, the Titans defense has been very, very stout. And they haven't allowed many points to anybody. The Indianapolis Colts were shut down for the entire second half. The Browns turned the ball over 3 times. And before both of those games, the Miami Dolphins game, which was a loss, they made Jay Cutler look like a really, really bad quarterback, which he may be.
Fair.
But
which isn't fair.
But, I mean, this defense has had 3 solid games back to back to back. And I think if they had maybe had some sacks in those games, we'd be talking about how they're on a hot streak. But because they haven't gotten those sacks, the narrative is different than it really probably should be.
Yeah, I'm starting to think, like, the sack numbers are just an anomaly at this point. Because over the last few games, they've gotten a pretty good amount of pressure. I mean, at least just from watching the games. I don't know how to really quantify that, but the sacks aren't showing up on the stat sheet, and it's obviously frustrating. But like you said, the defense has played fantastic over the last 2 weeks. They've given up under 30 points combined over the last 2 weeks. And I mean, if you want to add in the Dolphins game, they only gave up 16 points in that game. And one of those touchdowns was a defensive score. So the defense really only gave up 9 points in that game. So, or 10 points, because I think they missed an extra point.
Yeah.
But they're playing more comfortable right now. Dick LeBeau has figured out something, it seems. He figured it out halfway through the Colts game, because the first half was frustrating, as frustrating as I've been in a while watching the defense. But they seem to be clicking. The secondary in particular is playing very well. All the cornerbacks, Kevin Byard's just the greatest player of all time. Denoris Searcy has filled in admirably for Cyprian. Plus, we're getting Cyprian back now. And the three rotation at cornerback with Sims, Ryan, and Adoree has been they're getting pretty good. They're gelling very well together. So I'm curious to see how they play over these next 2 weeks at home against two quarterbacks that are pretty erratic and pretty inconsistent in how they play in Joe Flacco and Andy Dalton. So. Should be interesting.
Yeah, I mean, the defense, it's hard to quantify because they were so bad in stretches early in the season where they just kept letting easy score after easy score after easy conversion. I mean, it was just bad performance week in and week out, that when they quietly have a really good 10 quarters in a row, six quarters in a row, you really don't notice it. But you know, when you look back and you have time to kind of look, you know, in a bye week and watch the film and kind of look at it and stuff, I mean, they're playing well. I thought Adoree Jackson had one of his worst games against the Browns out of the last, I don't know, 4 games. And even then, it was nothing compared to bad games that corners have had for the Titans in the past. I mean, he looks like he's a solid player, and it finally seems like his lows aren't as low as I was afraid they would be when they drafted him. It feels like his lows are just an average corner, and his highs are really good. So, and we haven't even seen him with the ball in his hands yet. So, You know, I'm not going to let it go. The Titans are the second worst team in the NFL getting sacks. They only have 11 this year. That's terrible. I mean, it. You know, I get that LeBeau and Malarkey and the defense is fine with just getting pressures. You know, I keep wanting to get mad in press conferences and all, you know, and show some kind of emotion about how they're mad. They're not. And we just have to live with that. They think a pressure is equal to a sack for whatever reason. You know, the stats don't show it. That nothing proves that. But that they're okay with it. So we've got to kind of move past it and just be happy when we get a disruption. But, you know, I have a hard time going through mock drafts and not thinking, wow, I wish the Titans would take. By the way, I've explained this before. As somebody who's been abused by the Titans in back in 2-win and 3-win seasons, I'm going to check out mock drafts, you know, in November every year. And I have a hard time going in and looking at a mock draft and not thinking the Titans should go pass rusher with one or two of the first three picks. That's, you know, like I said, you can be as happy as you want with pressures, but sacks end drives. And at a certain point, the Titans are going to have to get sacks to win ball games.
Yeah. Through the first 4 weeks, it was looking like the Titans had probably the worst secondary in the league, and they were ranked at least in the bottom three in terms of pass yards per game. But over the last 3 weeks, they've really rebounded, and it shows in the numbers. They're up to 19th in passing yards per game given up, which, I mean, it's still not great, but it's middle of the road. They're only giving up 229 a game. That's really not that bad, all things considered, and they just seem more comfortable right now. So I've been pretty impressed with how they've rebounded, and they're in the top half of the league in terms of turnovers and interceptions. So feeling okay about the defense. Hopefully the offense can actually get it going after the bye week.
So you mentioned Jeremy Maclin. That's really all the Ravens have on offense right now, other than their quarterback, Joe Flacco. I mean, you have Breshad Perriman, the bust first-round pick. Hurt Mike Wallace, I believe, so he won't be playing. There's nothing that really scares you on their offense at all. Like, even the Browns, like, Njoku's a freak. He scares you. With the Colts, you have T.Y. Hilton, who's a Pro Bowl receiver who has torched the Titans for years. And the Dolphins, the Titans have never played well against Jarvis Landry. But, like, when you look at the Ravens, there's legitimately nothing that scares you.
Mike Wallace is actually playing. He's out of the concussion protocol, and he should be good to go. Regardless of that, I'm not really scared of him anymore. I mean, he is a deep threat, but the Titans have been really good at limiting big plays through the passing game this season, which has been kind of surprising after they gave up so many last season, mainly due to Parrish Cox. But he's not here anymore, so we're not given a big place in the passing game, and it's pretty nice to see. Like you said, Maclin's still a good receiver. He can still beat you, but the thing is, he's a slot receiver, and Logan Ryan has been manning the slot pretty much every game, and he's been really good. So I'm not expecting Maclin to do much of anything in this game, really. I'm not even sure if Breshad Perriman's playing. He's always injured. And even if he's not, what has he done to warrant any kind of attention from any cornerback, really?
Blow up the combine, that's it.
Yeah, and then get drafted in the first round for some reason. For no reason, really. But anyway, I think the only way the Ravens actually win this game is if their running game plays as well as they did last week, or even close to the level that they did last week, because they were ripping off chunk gains with Alex Collins and even Buck Allen towards the end of that game.
Yeah, we've been asked by another fan-sided page to talk about some things, and they asked us about the Titans run game, and I ended up writing something like, you know, I would be much more scared of Alex Collins against the Titans defense than I would Murray and Henry versus the Ravens defense. I have much more confidence that the Titans defense will get beat, you know, because the kind of thing I kind of came back to is I can tell you the good people that can stop the run for the Ravens. I'm going to ask all this now. My point will end up being that I think Alex Collins on Avery Williamson will get the Titans beaten, whether it's in the passing game or in the running game. I think if the Titans can't prevent that matchup from happening with blitzes or personnel changes or whatever, then they're going to get themselves killed. So I'm going to ask y'all, who are the impact players on the Titans front seven based off what you've seen this year on the field? Who do y'all think are the impact players?
I mean, I get it's still Casey, but I really don't think he's had as good of a season.
Really? Wesley Woodyard?
Yeah, it's Wesley Woodyard. Yeah, Woodyard. He's the only one I could come up with. I can't remember a game. Casey used to have games where, and they may have been four games apart the season, but he used to have games where he would have two big plays on a drive, or he would have one, you know, it would be a crucial down and it'd be third and four, and he'd come in and hit the quarterback and disrupt him and get an incompletion. I mean, I forget he plays for us most of the time. I mean, you know, no disrespect to Casey, because I know he can do – I mean, I know he can be a Pro Bowl player, but I don't know if it's a scheme thing. I don't know if it's a role change thing. I don't know if he's injured. I don't know what it is, but he does not look like the same player that he was before the Titans gave him the contract. And I don't mean that as a slight towards him getting his money. You know, get your money. It doesn't bother me at all. But – I think that's a good benchmark, and at the end of the year, if he doesn't have a big year, people are going to point to that and say, was giving him a contract extension the wrong thing to do? And, you know, I watch him now, and I just don't see that explosive playmaker, and we've talked about how he needs to be a three technique, and that's fine, but the Titans go some four-man looks where he plays three tech, and he doesn't explode off the ball there either. So, you know, Brian Arakpo is good when he comes forward, but that's not frequent enough. He's not being used correctly. I think he could be an impact player. And Derek Morgan is solid, but he is what he's always been, which is a really solid defensive end. But he's not somebody who you're going to really stand on the table to go to a Pro Bowl. And other than that, that's it. I mean, Austin Johnson, maybe. But other than Wesley Woodyard, I have a lot of questions about anybody else that would be on that list.
I don't have like stats in front of me to back this up at all. So this might be a little reckless. But have Morgan or Arakpo had a tackle for a loss this entire season in the run game? I feel like I never see them knifing through.
I know they both had.
I think
sacks,
I know Arakpo's had one. I think.
No, I think he had sacks, one against
Miami. Yeah, I think he had one tackle for loss against Miami. Now I may be wrong, but that's in my head.
Dude, it's Kevin Byard usually is the one that just comes out of a safety position and actually gets a tackle for a loss.
Or Woodyard.
Or Woodyard, right.
Or Avery Williamson.
Or Jayon Brown. And just kidding about Avery Williamson. Kevin Byard is very clearly the guy that they want to be the playmaker on this defense. And he might be that guy. I mean, I'm not saying he's going to be the level of impact that Keith Bullock was or Cortland Finnegan or somebody like that, but he has times where he looks like he's visibly getting in the head of defenders quarterbacks where they see the defender across the field.
Talking about Williamson?
I'm talking about Kevin Byard. where like he'll roll like it was especially against Cleveland where they would roll and it seemed like they didn't want to test wherever part of the field he was at. And I get it, when you throw three interceptions to a guy, I would stop throwing it his way too. But it seems like he could be a guy that is the Earl Thomas, a guy who can come and play down in the box and fly around and make plays and, you know, really take a game over. And it's somebody that the Titans haven't had in a long time. So I know we've talked about Kevin Byard a lot on this podcast, but again, this will always be a Kevin Byard appreciation podcast.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Is he going to be a Pro Bowler?
No,
he should be,
but he won't. Although I guess
I thought the same thing about LaJuan last year, that he should be, won't.
LaJuan and Kevin Byard should both be all pros. Can you name me AFC offensive tackles and AFC?
Well, all safety? Pro isn't AFC, NFC. It's just the
best.
No.
I'm sorry. I meant Pro Bowl, but I meant as a separate point, they should be all pros. But in terms of Pro Bowlers, can you tell me a better AFC offensive tackle or safety right now?
Well, I'm looking at interceptions, and Byard is second right now. Only Micah Hyde has more. So.
Yeah.
Take that one. How does Antoine Bethea have three interceptions? He's still playing?
Does he play? Who does he play for? San Francisco?
Dude, Arizona.
Arizona. Wow. Wow. Shouts to Bethea for making that money.
And McCourty has three.
Yeah, you're right. I can't think of any other AFC. The only two I came up with was Joe Thomas and Cordy Glenn for tackle.
And Joe Thomas is out for the season.
Yeah.
Glenn's been injured, too. And he was going to get traded.
Did Glenn play against the Jets? Because whoever they had at left tackle got worked.
No, he's been injured. Oh, no. I think he might have played. He might have gotten worked.
Anyway. He might have.
I digress. Pain,
yeah, we're getting too far off subject. The Titans have some great players.
So, as we start to wrap up, I had a topic I wanted to talk about. Let's just talk about Logan Ryan because we were talking about him a little bit before we started the show. Underrated performer so far in the season for the Titans, Logan Ryan.
Yeah, after the first, 2 weeks, people were like, this is the biggest free agent bust we've ever had. And I'm not exactly sure, what games they were watching. He gave up a couple catches, fine, but they really weren't. They didn't do a lot of damage. And he's been great. I mean, he hasn't been picking off passes mainly because he's been playing slot cornerback. Which he didn't play his entire Patriots career when he was picking off passes left and right. But he's done his job capably. He had that forced fumble in the second game of the season. And he's played very sticky coverage on pretty much any receiver that's come across with him. He's let us not have to play Bryce McCain in the slot. So that we could play the best configuration, which is him in the slot and Sims and Ndori outside. So he's been worth it, in my opinion, worth all $10 million per year.
One of the good ways you can tell just off the bat if a cornerback is having a decent day is when you look at somebody who just had a really good catch against your defensive backs and you complain about why that guy is covering him. So when Hopkins caught all those passes, I was like, why is Bryce McCain covering Hopkins? Why is LeSean Sims not doing a better job covering Hopkins? When you don't say that or when you say that and the name out of your mouth isn't Logan Ryan, then that means that guy's doing a good job somewhere else. Because if they have to consistently work that mismatch over and over and over, it means that other guys aren't open and they're having to be predictable in their offense, which some teams want to be. But, we're not seeing deep passes fly over Ryan's head. We're not seeing him get beat underneath. You know, we're not just seeing him get, allow 10 catches in front of him. And, people don't even really try him. They try Adoree until they realize that Adoree's going to knock a pass away or immediately tackle a guy after he catches the ball. And then they go to the other side, but they rarely try Logan Ryan because he's always in pretty solid position and does a good job of disrupting the pass. So, and that's why the Titans brought him in. They didn't bring him in to be a ball hawk. They didn't bring him in to be a cornerback one to shadow across the field. They brought him in to play one side of the field opposite of Adoree and move inside to the slot when they ran three wide receiver sets. And he's done that well. So John Robinson said, this is what I expect him to be. He brought him in, and that's what he is. You know, you can complain that, the price tag may be too high for a guy you think is just a slot corner, but in the NFL, your slot corner has to be a really good player. So, if you spend a first-round pick on a corner and you spend $10 million on a corner, then you expect them to do their jobs well. And now all you need is to find one more guy who can fill out that group and you'll have a really good defensive backfield.
My theory about giving up big plays has been confirmed. Tennessee is giving up 5.1. Yards per play to opponents, which over this season ranks 12th, which is pretty good. But over the last three, they're giving up just 4.2, and that's second best in the NFL, second only to the Minnesota Vikings. So they've done a really good job limiting big plays.
I was going to say, I saw a stat this week that said passes of 20 or more yards, the Titans are tied for the least amount in the NFL with the Vikings.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, that's, you know, everybody know the Vikings are a great defense and they can get to the quarterback. You know, the Titans aren't getting that constant pressure and constant sacks that the Vikings are, and they're still not allowing those big gains over the top. So, you know, for as much as I criticize Dick LeBeau for rushing three, you know, if he can prevent big plays and get tough and, you know, hold them to hold other teams to field goals and get takeaways, that's a formula that will work if you've got a competent offense.
And we just have to get Everson Griffin and Danielle Hunter and Anthony Barr.
No big deal.
Look,
to be fair, none of those guys were first-round picks. So,
look, if someone wants to argue with me that Logan Ryan was not worth the money, I'll just show them T.Y. Hilton's stat line from Monday Night Football.
Oh my God!
Just show him the W. That's all you need.
One catch, 18 yards. This guy, like T.Y. Hilton, we're used to him going like 11 for 145, and he went 1 for 13.
Yeah,
you know, I don't agree with the whole Moneyball approach, but you know, when they talk about you're trying to replace runs with runs, you need to try to buy wins instead. If I can buy a group of guys that can play against the teams in the division and win games, I don't care if I have to pay it. You know, you've got the money you have to spend as an NFL team. They're not saving this money and spending it somewhere else. There's not guys the Titans are letting go. So when they pay $10 million for a guy and he does a good job, I don't care if it's a punter or a center or a long snapper. If you've got a good guy who's, you know, one of the best at his position, or if he's doing a really good job at what you ask him to do, why do you care what he gets paid? It doesn't raise your ticket prices. So just calm down and enjoy the fact that
there's not a Logan Ryan tax on Titans tickets this year.
Yeah, that's not why the beer at the concession stand is more expensive. That's a whole different thing.
Imagine though if like the Dolphins, after they got Ndamukong Suh, they just put his picture on all the tickets, and they were like, yes, we got this all-pro defensive tackle. Now your tickets are going to have an Ndamukong Suh tax to help pay for him.
That's right. They had like a parking meters at the parking lot where when you're out of time, Ndamukong Suh's face just pops up.
Well, we've kind of covered everything. Kind of a boring matchup, to be completely honest.
It is, yeah, honestly.
Until one of these teams come out and puts 30 points on, you know. I'm sure it's always the games we think aren't going to be exciting. The Cleveland Browns game, you know.
I don't know that was necessarily exciting, though.
I'll tell you this. I have never been, well, not never, but I'm rarely as anxious as I was for that game. I was on the edge of my seat, you know. We had a quarterback with his leg basically literally tied behind his back, and you know they were the Browns, so pretty fair matchup.
I'm expecting like a 17-13 game in this one. I this is going to be a tough watch.
Okay, one last topic I want to hit.
I expect Titans top 30.
Titans running game. Why has it sucked so bad? Why has DeMarco Murray looked like he's lost every time he touches the football? And why does Derrick Henry look like me trying to carry the ball in the NFL?
These are fair questions. I don't think the run blocking has been as good as it was last year, because it was fantastic last year, and it's been maybe just a little bit above average this year. But something's up with the running backs, and I don't know if it's the running backs coach or telling them to do something else, but they're not hitting their holes. And they're trying to bounce everything outside. I really don't know what's happening. And this is really not the game to get it figured out, because the Ravens have a really good run defense. So I don't know what's going to happen. The running game in this game in particular could be disgusting, to be honest.
Yeah, I mean, some of it you have to look back and say, you know, they played the Browns, which have a really tough front seven. An aggressive front seven. They played the Seahawks. They played the Texans back when they had JJ Watt and Merciless. They played, you know, they played the Jaguars. They played some good defenses. So, you know, the running game really hadn't had that game where it's like, okay, we're going to beat the tar out of this terrible team, and then we're really going to find our rhythm. You know, it seems like the recipe for success for them is run into a brick wall for a whole half, and then in the third half, things start to loosen up, and in the third quarter, things start to loosen up, and in the fourth quarter, you know, it really breaks open, and you know, can kind of do something. So, and especially with Henry late in games, but the way they run it, it just, you know, they're running a lot more pull and guard stuff, which doesn't work because we're not getting the backside sealed off. I don't know if that's a Ben Jones issue, or I don't know if that's something that the way they're running that is really weird. I'm not sure whether they need to check out of those calls or whether they need a shorter trap or whatever, but something is wrong with the way the offensive line and the running game is schemed up this year when they've just decided to fall in love with Josh Klein pulling. So I have problems with that. I would like to see more hat on a hat going, you know, downfield, you know, I'm going to put a fullback in and we're going to run it right at you. And Derrick Henry and DeMarco Murray aren't going to try to bounce it out and score a touchdown. They just want 4 yards here. And we haven't seen that yet. So, you know, if we see that this week, great. But a lot of it is, what people have talked about is that the defense isn't scared of the passing threats. You know, they're not scared of Taywan Taylor. They're not scared of Corey Davis. When you can play, well, not Corey Davis, because he hadn't been in, Rashard Matthews and Eric Decker, you know, they're supposedly giving extra attention to Delanie Walker, though I don't see it as much as Rubisky seems to claim it happens. But
I have not noticed that.
Yeah, they seem to say that it's a huge thing, that he's getting double covered a lot. I don't think that's true, but when you can force a team to go two high safety instead of single high safety, or if you can force them to not blitz their linebackers and leave that big vacuum in the middle of the field, you can get the running game going. But if you can't get, you know, if you can't force them to do that, you're going to get seven men coming or six men coming, you know, straight at your running back and not have anything to do. And it kills you, because when you have one more guy than you can block, your running back's automatically trying to cut around and find a hole that's not there anymore, and you're in trouble. So, you know, it's tough to say if it's chicken or the egg with whether the running game would work better if the passing game was working, or if it, so that's something I'm curious to see when Corey Davis is back. The one thing I know that needs to happen is Rubisky needs to call more play-action passes. If he would run a play and then come back to that same look and run a play-action off of it, it would force the linebackers to stay home, which is always the wrong decision. If the linebackers have their feet still, they're wrong. Because in the NFL, your wide receivers are running full speed all the time, and your offensive linemen are too. If you can get a linebacker to stop and read something instead of instinctively playing, you get an extra step on him, and that all that athleticism difference is neutralized. You know, if you get Taywan Taylor with an extra step on a linebacker because he's afraid he missed the run, then you get a chance at a big play. If you get him afraid that Taywan's going to beat him behind him so he stays still and Ben Jones gets up to the next level, you get a big play. So, you know, all those things work together, but the play action pass is something the Titans have severely underutilized.
Yeah, one last point. I think the running game will get better now that Mariota's back to full health, because just having the threat of Mariota with his legs scrambling or even pulling out on read options, it really does help a run game. You saw it when Chris Johnson went for 2,000 yards. He was playing with Vince Young. And just having that extra guy that the defense has to key on or at least has to spy on, it can open up run lanes. So I think once Mariota's back to full health and he's running again, I think the running game will be better as a whole because of it.
I want to close with this. When the Titans drafted Derrick Henry, every time he got the ball, the entirety of Nissan Stadium would be on the edge of their seats. Now, it's still the case. I don't know about you guys, but whenever he gets the ball, I just like want to cry. It's so sad. Like he looks like a bigger Chris Johnson, honestly.
Yeah, which sounds great on paper until you realize we mean like the indecisiveness, not the fact that he could just explode and get a touchdown anytime.
Yeah. It's rough.
Well, yeah. We've slandered Derrick Henry, so now our episode is complete. So the Titans take on the Ravens at noon on Sunday. I don't know where you can watch that. Google it. And until next
nowhere.
Time.
That game's not even on Red
Stadium.
Oh, dude, you're roboting so bad.
But I'm just going to I'm gonna leave that in. It's going to add a nice comedic effect to the end of the show.
Yeah.
Yep. Sorry, guys.
We will be back early next week to recap the Titans game against the Ravens. Until then, for Matias Wadner, Will Lomas, thank you for listening to the Titan-sized podcast. We will be back next week.